On today's Your Call, it is our end of the year book show. We will open the lines to get your book recommendations. We'll speak with independent bookstore owners about what they and their customers are reading. And here's some good news. According to recent reports, independent bookstores are thriving. And then later in the show, we will find out why mental health workers at Kaiser Permanente are on a five-day strike across California. Today's guest, Ken Rogers, has been a Kaiser psychologist for 15 years. He says it's common for patients to wait 2 months for therapy appointments. Kaiser mental health workers are striking for improved patient care and better working conditions. Join us after the news.
This is the BBC News. Hello, I'm Jonathan Izard. A judge in New York has sentenced President Trump's former personal lawyer Michael Cohen to 3 years in prison. Mr. Cohen had pleaded guilty to charges including lying to Congress and violating U.S. election finance laws. In a statement to the court, Mr. Cohen said that time and time again, he felt it was his duty to cover up for what he described as the dirty deeds of Mr. Trump, as Nick Bryant reports.
At times fighting back tears, Michael Cohen said he'd been in a state of personal and mental incarceration since the day he first started working for Donald Trump, and that the president was right to call him weak because he covered up what he called his dirty deeds out of a sense of blind loyalty. He said there was little to admire about Donald Trump. He apologized to the American people and promised to share as much information with the special counsel Robert Mueller as he could truthfully give. He also said he felt a sense of freedom, even though he was being sent to prison.
The British Prime Minister, Theresa May, has just addressed MPs from her Conservative Party who are now holding a no-confidence vote in her leadership. She had already warned them that now was no time for a change of leader, just months before Britain leaves the EU. At least 48 of her MPs triggered the confidence vote because they're angry about Mrs. May's Brexit withdrawal agreement. Vicky Young is at Westminster, where the vote is taking place.
There are cabinet ministers and ministers I've been speaking to today who say, look, if she can get through this and she wins with a decent amount behind her, it does give her some more room for manoeuvre. But it doesn't solve, does it, how she gets that deal through Parliament. That is still a huge problem for her. I think it's also very striking that...
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Independent bookstores are booming. Whether it's the sense of community, the events, the selection, or just taking a break and browsing books, bookstores are thriving around the country. It is a tradition on Your Call to take some time at the end of the year to celebrate books and talk about some of our favorites. And we're opening our lines, and we'd love to take your recommendations. What are you reading right now? If you need any recommendations for holiday gifts, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email recommendations to yourcall@kalw.org. We will keep a list and we will post it at yourcallradio.org right after the show. And then later in the show, we are going to talk about mental health workers at Kaiser Permanente who are on a five-day strike to demand improved patient care and working conditions. But first, we're talking about books with two independent booksellers. Pete Mulvihill is the co-owner of Green Apple Books, an independent bookstore selling new and used books for more than 50 years. It has two locations in San Francisco. Hi, Pete. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rose. Good to see you.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Amy Thomas. Amy owns Pegasus Books. She's got three stores in Berkeley and Oakland, and she's been a bookseller since 1980. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have both of you. Well, we do book shows every year, multiple times a year. And gosh, I remember, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we were constantly talking about how Amazon and online retailers were cutting in to bookstore profits. And we were wondering if you all were going to survive. Well, we have some great news. According to CBS, between 2009 and 2015, more than 570 independent bookstores opened in the United States, bringing the total to more than 2,200. which is great news. It shows that people love to take a break and browse books. Amy, you've been a bookseller since 1980. Talk about these numbers and what book selling has been like for you.
Well, I guess it's been a roller coaster, obviously. We've gone through some really dreadful times, some hard times, a lot of competition from really all directions, chain stores and, you know, discounters and online. But, you know, those of us who really wanted to do it just had to get our act together, I guess you might say. And we've tried to just embrace every kind of technology that helps us get books faster for people. We hire people who just love books and just are great with customers. And, I just feel like we kept our noses down on and our eye on the ball. That was a mixed metaphor. But it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of engagement on every level, lots of partnerships.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Pete? What would you add?
Well, I guess each store and story is unique. You know, the stores that have closed over the years have faced their own set of challenges. Those that have survived or opened second or third stores, which seems to be happening a lot, have adapted. I think that's the main story. You know, there's all these micro conditions, the back end stuff that's really boring, a publisher, rapid fulfillment. It used to take us 2 or 3 weeks to get books from the East Coast. Now a lot of the big publishers have opened warehouses on the West Coast. We can get them in 1 or 2 days. So there's all kinds of efficiencies that have been created over the years. And I think, as you said in the introduction, excuse me, people have just, they vote with their wallets with every purchase they make. And enough people continue to want to support brick and mortar independent bookstores on a day-to-day basis. And they vote with their purchases. When they shop online, they're voting against it. And when they come into the store and buy something, whether it's a book or a calendar, they're voting to keep us in business. And so far, we're still here.
Mm-hmm. And what are you hearing from customers? Because I think once the stories got out and people started talking about the real possibility of so many independent bookstores shutting down because of Amazon and other sites, I mean, Amazon obviously is the biggest one, people realized that they really wanted a community store. And the face-to-face interaction, meeting the owners who are often in the store, meeting other people, finding recommendations, that really means something. What are you hearing from your customers, Amy, the people who come back over and over again?
Well, obviously, for a lot of people, we'll be 50 years this year, actually, coming up. And we just have had so many families who've kind of grown up near or around our stores, and their children are now grown, and they're bringing their children in. So I think we've just somehow settled into being a place on the block that people really count on and want to be there. And also the fact that we can, as Pete was saying, we can do so many more things better than we used to be able to do, getting things faster. We do, you know, school fairs, and we engage with schools on every level, libraries. I feel like we've just become part of a literary landscape that people are really reluctant to let go of.
And what would you add, Pete?
Well, I think you alluded to it earlier, that people do want to get off of their computers every once in a while. They want to get out of their house. They want to either, you know, get away from their spouse or meet their next one. They want to just kind of be in another place besides home or work. So that's that third place concept in sociology. So we have, you know, we have a lot of people. Stereotypically, the independent bookseller, really wants to hand sell you a book. They want to come in. They want you to come in, talk to you about what you want to read, what you read next, and give you your next great read. And we do a lot of that, and it's a joy. But we have a lot of customers that just want to be left alone. They just want to poke around and discover that they don't know what they're looking for. They just want to spend some time. It's really freeing to be away from 10 open tabs in your browser and just kind of poke around and kill time and wait until your dinner reservation comes up.
And so, Pete, you always bring a great stack of books into the studio. What are your customers reading right now? What are some of the hot books right now?
Well, the number one at every store that I've talked to is Michelle Obama's new memoir. It's almost selling so well, we don't want to give it airtime. we're also selling a lot of There, There by Tommy Orange. which has gotten great buzz, and it's well-deserved. It's a very unique book set in Oakland mostly, about urban Native Americans, which has been a hole in American literature for a long time. It's a wonderful book. We're also selling a lot of Educated, which is a memoir by Tara Westover. She didn't step foot in a schoolroom until she went to college. She was raised in the rural Idaho by sort of survivalists. So it's a really beautiful memoir of grit and determination and curiosity. And then my favorite novel of the year is called The Seas. It's by Samantha Hunt. It's actually a slightly older novel, reprinted and reissued by Tin House Press with a beautiful cover. And it's this kind of ethereal novel. It's a woman who believes she's a mermaid. And you can't quite tell if maybe she is a mermaid, and that's kind of the way the story is going, or if she's kind of losing it. And it's a beautiful story set in the north end of the world. And it's very misty and foggy and aquatic and mysterious. So that's been my my favorite novel of the year.
That sounds like a great book to read during the winter as the fog comes out and it gets cold. That's great. That's The Seas.
The Seas.
And we're keeping a list of all of these books, and you can find the list after the show at yourcallradio.org. What about you, Amy? What books are selling at Pegasus Books?
Well, I also brought There. It's just a great book. We're really having fun with it, the Tommy Orange book. We also are finding great reads for the new Barbara Kingsolver book, Unsheltered. People love this book and love her writing, and it's a real return to what she does best. Let me see. We're also selling a lot of a great new writer, and I guess she's not that new, N.K. Jemisin, who writes science fiction, is one way of calling it. It's a distant future book, and it's just thought-provoking and beautiful and one of the most evocative displays of world-building since Octavia Butler. That's from one of my coworkers, Amai, in Oakland. We also like Susan Orlean's book, The Library Book, which is just a real deep dive into intrigue and survival in libraries. Really good. I have to mention, if I may, the Booker Award winner, the Man Booker Prize winner from England called Milkman by Anita Burns, a mysterious, beautiful, so totally gripping book. The city is not named, the characters are not named, but believe me, from the first page, you'll know exactly what's going on in this story. You will love it.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. Amy Thomas owns Pegasus Books. They've got three stores in Berkeley and Oakland, and she's been a bookseller since 1980. Pete Mulvihill is co-owner of Green Apple, an independent bookstore selling new and used books for more than 50 years. They've got two locations in San Francisco. And today it is our year, end of year. I cannot believe it's the end of the year. End of year book show. And we open the lines every year to take your recommendations, find out what you're reading, whether it's a new book or maybe a classic. And if you need any recommendations for the holidays, we'd love to hear from you. My 8-year-old niece loves to read so much. My brother told me recently they were at a restaurant and she wasn't eating, and her mom and dad were trying to talk to her, and she said, excuse me, I'm trying to read.
Oh, I love this and, child.
Yes, and when they go to the grocery store, she sits in the cart and reads. So if you have any recommendations for an 8-year-old, give us a call.
Can I give you a quick
plug
one?
Please.
I give you a quick plug? It's the Parker.
Yes.
It's the Parker Inheritance by Varian Johnson. It's a puzzle. It's a wonderful book set in the South. Children who liked Holes will probably like this. There's a story within a city, and the city has also a past that they're trying to get to the bottom of, and it's just wonderful.
There's also some graphic novels from Raina Telgemeier, Smile and Drama. They're perfect for an 8-year-old.
And graphic novels seem to be exploding. I mean, they have been over the years, but I just get lost in the graphic novel section. They're just, I mean, they're incredible.
Yeah, and they've been going kind of younger and younger. And kids, my son is an avid reader and my daughter's a little more reluctant, but when she gets a good graphic novel in her hand, she tears through it. So there's definitely something there for certain kinds of readers.
We've been swept away by, just completely. The Best We Could Do by Tui Boo is just so wonderful. You got to get your hands on that one. It's just great.
The Best We Could Do. That's
There's
great.
Also a well, great you... book that called My Favorite Thing Is Monsters, which is getting a real. It's a real. It's an adult book. It's not for children, but it's dazzling, beautiful.
Well, if you have any recommendations, if you'd like to shout out, give a shout out to your favorite bookstore, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And before we get to calls, I wanted to ask you both about book drives, because a few weekends ago, I went into Point Reyes Books, which is a great bookstore. A really lovely couple just bought the bookstore in the last year, and it's doing really well. And I loved that they're having a book drive. So kids from West Marin who are low income picked out the books that they want, and they put them in a wagon, and they're asking customers to buy the books. So, you know, every child can have something to open if they celebrate Christmas. And so do you both do that? And do you know of any other book drives if people would like to get involved in something like that? Pete?
Yeah, we do that at Green Apple every year. We call it Book Angels. And this year, we're all the books that are sold are going to the Hamilton Family Shelters in San Francisco. Stephen and Molly at Point Reyes were both ex-Green Applers who met on the job at Green Apple. We're really proud of them.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, for what they've done with that store. It was a great store, and they really put their unique stamp on it. And it's great to see that they're engaging in the community that way. I think a lot of bookstores are doing things like that. Amy?
We collect books every month. Each month, a different group. We collect gift certificates and books. And we're currently collecting for the Richmond RISE program, R-Y-E-S, which supports community building for teenagers in Richmond.
All right. Well, thank you. And we air in many parts of the country, so I'm sure if you want to get involved in a book drive, I'm sure there's something at either your local independent bookstore, maybe your library, but it's just such an important way to get involved and be sure that every child has a book that interests them.
You know, can I mention one other thing? Our trade association,
sure, please.
The Northern California Independent Booksellers Association, organized giving all the books that were as the result of a trade show to people in Paradise and in that region.
Oh, that's
to help to begin to rebuild their libraries.
Yeah, thank you. That's so important. Well, we have a number of callers on the line. Let's go to Clint in San Francisco. Hi, Clint. Welcome to the show.
Hello there. Good to be on the show. I'm reading a book right now. It's called Imperial San Francisco. It's Urban Power, Earthly Ruin by Gray Breschen. And I highly recommend it to anybody in the Bay Area. It basically goes into the history of how San Francisco was built on mining technology, and how like the Hearst and the DeYoungs and even Berkeley were like pretty much run by these people who are imperialists, who are into basically exploiting labor and also destroying the environment in order to achieve their fortunes. And it's really fascinating. It's got all the information on all the people that have shaped modern San Francisco and Berkeley and Oakland.
Well, thank you for that recommendation. You know, Gray Breschen has been on the show, but it's been a while. We should have him come on to talk about that. Thank you, Clint. Pete or Amy, are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, we've yes. sold a lot of copies of that over the years, I've been told lately that there's some echoing going on from the past with the current situation in the city.
Oh, right.
Newly relevant, sadly.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you for that. And let's go next to Judy in San Francisco. Hi, Judy.
While we're talking about exploiting labor, I just learned about a new book. I'm waiting for it to come in for me. It's called A History of America in 10 Strikes by Eric Loomis. That's E-R-I-K, Loomis. And it just sounds really interesting. You can sum up American history in 10 labor strikes. Sounds pretty awful, actually. But also, while we were talking about book drives, I have my own personal little book drive. All year long, you know, I walk around San Francisco a lot, and I find things. And a lot of times I find that people are throwing out little boxes of children's books. So I take those home. And then on Halloween, that's what I give away as my trick-or-treats.
Oh.
That's sweet.
That's great, Judy.
I give away toys and books that I find.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah,
so
I have
much
some
better
repeat
than
customers. Okay.
Thank you. Okay, so this is why I love our listeners. That's fantastic, Judy. Thank you so much for calling. And I love this book, A History of America in 10 Strikes. I just looked it up, by historian Eric Loomis. We will definitely invite him on the show in the new year. If you have any book ideas or authors that you think should be on the show, we'd also love to hear from you. Thank you, Judy. Let's go next to Louise in Oakland. Hi, Louise.
Hi there. The book I'd love to mention is The Man Who Came Uptown by George Pelecanos. He's written a lot of books around about Washington, D.C. He was a writer for The Wire, so his books are mysteries, thrillers with really well-developed characters, mostly set in D.C. What's interesting about this one in particular is that it really focuses on the importance of libraries in jails. So one of his characters is sort of, there's a librarian at the jail in D.C. who sort of turns him on to books, and she does these book groups with prisoners, and she thinks a lot about the book, so you learn about, you know, her story in the novel and how she got to be the librarian, and then, you know, what happens to the various characters who get out, and how important books are to them, and it just is a real big focus on libraries and their importance to jails.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. Thank you for that one. The Man Who Came Uptown by George Pelecanos. Are you familiar with this one, Amy?
I love his writing. I haven't read this book, but now I'm going to. It's going on my list.
Yeah. What about you, Pete?
No, we've sold tons of his books over the years, and I know that he's a really well-respected writer, but I don't know that one.
Wow, that sounds really great. Thank you so much for that recommendation, Louise. And we got an email from Sharon who says, I want to thank Christopher's Books on 18th Street at Missouri in Potrero Hill. This is in San Francisco. I special order books for my pen pals in California prisons, and Christopher's gets the books quickly and sends them to my pen pals. Wow, that's so nice, Sharon. And maybe, Sharon, you might want to send the booklet Louise just recommended, The Man Who Came Uptown, to some of your pen pals. But thank you so much. This is a great idea. Actually, Sharon, if you can send us the organization that connects you with prisoners in California, we can also mention that to listeners who might want to send them some books. That's a great idea. Thank you so much. Let's go next to Nancy in Berkeley. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Yes, my favorite book, I think it was 2016, is called The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. And I absolutely love this book. I recommended it to all my friends, and everybody who's read it has really, really liked it. It's beautifully written. The characters are really well done. It's a great story, and it's just a truly, really wonderful book, and I highly recommend it. And another book that I really loved was Warlight by, his name just escaped me, but it's still out.
Michael Ondaatje?
Yes, Michael Ondaatje. I've read most of his books, and they're all very different, and this one is definitely different, and it's just a really exciting book. And and the other book that I really loved last year was by Celeste Ng, called I think Little Fires Everywhere. Really, really good book. So those are my recommendations.
Well, thank you for that great list, Nancy. Have you read that one, Amy, Little Fires Everywhere?
I have. It's wonderful.
And can you give us a quick synopsis?
I don't think I can. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because I read it at the beginning of last year. I couldn't do it justice, but okay. I think your caller could probably.
Nancy, are you still with us? I think we just let her go. All right. Well, thank you so much, Nancy. We've got a number of recommendations over email. I'll just read a couple before break. Bill writes, Charles C. Mann's The Wizard and the Prophet is a magnificent history of the development of the environmental movement in the 20th century, including It's bifurcation into the two competing camps we see today, founded by Norman Borlaug and William Voigt. Prophets such as Paul Ehrlich argue that we must identify and live with natural limits, and wizards like Stuart Brand see salvation in technological fixes. Thank you for that one. We have Rick. I'm enjoying Seymour Hersh's memoir, Reporter. I would recommend it to those born into the internet age who are curious about what journalism once was. And for guys like me, it's a trip down memory lane because Hersh was involved in all the top stories from the 60s and the 70s. Thank you for that, Rick. In fact, we've been wanting to invite Seymour Hersh on the show to talk about his memoir. Sharon writes, I'm reading Pictures of a Gone City by UC Berkeley professor Richard Walker. I purchased it at Pegasus Books. This author offers a look at the Bay Area's massive economy and has constructive theories to transform it into a habitable society for low and income, middle income citizens. Thank you for that, Sharon. We had Richard Walker on earlier this year, I think twice, to talk about that book. And we are going to take a quick break. Thank you so much for all of these great recommendations. It is our year-end book show every year, a couple times a year, really, but definitely at the end of the year. We open the lines to take your recommendations, find out what you're reading. If you need any recommendations for holiday ideas, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to give a shout out to your local bookstore, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. And today we're joined by Pete Mulvihill, co-owner of Green Apple Books, an independent bookstore that has been in San Francisco for more than 50 years. They now have two locations. And Amy Thomas owns Pegasus Books. They've got three stores in Berkeley and Oakland, and Amy has been a bookseller since 1980. This is your call. We'll be back after this.
He's a wealthy sex offender with friends in high places, including the current Secretary of Labor. Jeffrey Epstein worked his connections to dodge a lengthy prison sentence. Those connections included Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta, who at the time was Miami's top federal prosecutor. Miami Herald reporter Julie Brown on Epstein and Secretary Acosta next time on 1A.
You can hear 1A at 11 o'clock this morning, just a half an hour from now, right after your call here on KALW. There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on your call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send an email to us to yourcall@kalw.org. You may go to our website, yourcallradio.org, if you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone. Call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about a new documentary called Drugs. The S in the drugs is a dollar sign, and it examines a pricing system that allows medication costs to soar as high as $1,000 per pill. We will find out what can be done to bring down drug prices so patients do not have to choose between medication and putting food on the table. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, yourcall@kalw.org. In about 10 minutes, we will talk about why mental health workers at Kaiser are striking for 5 days. They are demanding improved patient care and working conditions. But now we are talking about books. It is our year-end book show. If you have any suggestions, would like to talk about what you're reading, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're joined by Amy Thomas. Amy owns Pegasus Books with three stores in Berkeley and Oakland. She's been a bookseller since 1980. And Pete Mulvihill is co-owner of Green Apple Books, an independent bookstore selling new and used books for more than 50 years. They've got two locations in San Francisco. And before we get back to phone calls, I'd love to ask both of you, what's exciting you right now in the book world? I mean, we've had you on before, and we've talked about, you know, more of a focus on writers of color, younger writers, stories with more diverse characters. And I think we've seen it. I mean, we're getting more and more books from, you know, young black women, for example, women from Nigeria. It seems like things are really changing. Amy, what would you say to that? What's really exciting you right now in the book world?
I think that exactly is very exciting, and it's something we've been kind of, you know, pushing for and hoping for years, and it's just we're seeing the fruits of it now just spilling out. So many choices and all different kinds of diversity. I mean, it, in a way, what it is trying to figure out what are going to be the new classics for children, for example. What are going to be the books that will, you know, take the place in the canon? And one that we think is so beautiful is a book called Julianne is a Mermaid, about a young child who wants to be a mermaid, and his abuela is on board and takes him, you know, helps with the costume and helps him with the parade. And it's so beautifully drawn. It's by Jessica Love. And we just love this book. It's so beautifully told. It's great.
Wow. Yeah, this movement is definitely boiling up from the children's world, I think, but also certainly hitting the adult world.
Absolutely.
So many of the end-of-year lists you see now are much more rich and diverse. There's really a variety of voices from cookbooks to kids' books to fiction.
Hate U Give is one of our biggest books of the year by Angie Thomas. We love this book.
What's that one about?
The Hate U Give. This is about a girl growing up in a violent place. Actually, there's a movie out that I have not seen. Have you seen it?
No.
But she just hit the ground running with this book. It is absolutely wonderful. It's her growth and her resilience just are remarkable.
There's a police shooting at the beginning.
Is this the one? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I have been wanting to see that movie.
Read the book.
Read the book.
Great.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to read the book. I feel like, you know, every week on this show, we focus on a book, and it's usually nonfiction, so I'm always reading for the show.
Right.
I just don't have much time to read for, well, I mean, I love the books we read on the show, but it's just time-consuming. I mean, I have to say, we had Barbara Kingsolver on, and I hate to admit it, but we hardly have on fiction writers. And I'd love to do more of that in 2019, just because there's so much great nonfiction, and it's a political show, but, it, you know, we definitely want to have more fiction writers
on. And there are
so many
good local authors that would drop by. I mean, Andrew Sean Greer won the Pulitzer last year for his novel Less, which I brought along. There's the Bay Area is still really rich with local fiction writers.
You know, a wonderful book, which maybe everybody knows about now, but I just couldn't get enough of it. It was a book called Pachinko by Min-Jin Lee about growing up Korean in Japan. And it's a world I didn't know was there. It's wonderful. You can't put it down. It's great.
There's also a lot of new books coming out by Native American authors. I'm looking forward to one called The Heartbeat at Wounded Knee, Native America from 1890 to the Present Day by David Truer. I'm hoping to get him on in the new year. And then you all mentioned Tommy Orange, but there's a lot of books coming out by Native American authors.
Yeah, and about Native American history. One of the best books I've read in the last few years, that Killers of the Flower Moon.
I think we brought that last time.
It's voices that haven't been heard are getting a chance, which is wonderful to hear.
Well, we have a number of callers on the air, so let's go through a few. Let's hear from Aria in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, I just want to recommend Eva's Berlin, which was published in 2000. It's a story of a local psychotherapist growing up as a Jewish girl in Berlin and her resiliency. It reads like a novel. It's riveting, and it shows the resiliency of children. Her father was Jewish and was able to escape through Holland, but the Dutch turned her and her German mother back to Berlin, and so she has to forge for herself in Berlin, which is like both a wasteland and something that she describes as luminous and inviting. She's like hanging out at the zoo and finding playmates and judging with compassion the adults and their eccentricities around her. It is riveting, and it's an interesting contrast to something like Chorus of Stones that talks about also, you know, German aggression, and we can think about, you know, America and how this applies to us today. So that's what I suggest. Eva's Berlin by Eva Levinson.
Thank you so much for that. Sounds great. Thank you. Let's go to Carol in San Francisco. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
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 I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I would like to recommend Justice on Fire, the Kansas City firefighters case, and the railroading of the Marlboro Five. It's a true story, nonfiction, by J. Patrick O'Connor, who also wrote books about other frame-ups, including of Mumia Abu-Jamal in Pennsylvania and Kevin Cooper here at San Quentin. And this case, this book, it reads like a novel because it's very exciting, but it also is a great truth teller about the American justice system and how it frames people up for crimes they didn't do.
Mm. Well, that sounds like another great book that we should have on the show. Thank you so much, Carol.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's go next to Marina in Kensington. Hi, Marina.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm reading this book called The Other Side of the Wall. And it was written by a professor from Northern California called Richard Hardigan. And it's not fiction, it's reality. And he lived in Palestine for years, and he described the everyday life of the Palestinians living on behind the 8 meters high wall that separates their villages from Israel or their villages from other villages. It's a great book, and the professor Richard Falk, that was a former United Nations special rapporteur, he wrote, every American should be forced to read this illuminating book. So,
wow.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Well, another great one. Thank you so much, Marina. We should also do a show about that. Unfortunately, we're almost out of time because we really wanted to focus on this Kaiser strike, so I hate to have to say goodbye to both of you a little earlier than usual. But final thoughts, I just love our listeners, all the great recommendations they provide. What else are you looking forward to as we're about to wrap up this year? Anything exciting in 2019, Pete?
I'm not sure what's coming down the pipe. I will say that we do have a lot of people who are looking for either something hopeful or some sort of escape. One of the books I read recently that has hope is Rising Out of Hatred, which is about a white nationalist whose godfather was David Duke, and this kid grew up in the white nationalist movement, and he went to college, and through some very, very, very patient people, he eventually, he revoked his white nationalism and has spoken out against it. And it really, in these days, it's to find something, a story of success and patience and hope and love, is really inspirational.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that it would be amazing to have that man on the show.
Yeah, it's a Washington Post journalist who wrote the book, but obviously okay. the character would be, the subject would be a great interview.
Right. What about you, Amy?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of hard to focus on next year because we're really in the throes of it right now.
Yeah.
And there's so many wonderful books. So I guess two things. One is that we're being very proactive in getting a list of things that are coming out in the coming months so that people can pre-order them through our stores. We're looking very much forward to the paperback versions of a lot of the books that we're talking about here to bring them to even wider audience. And we go to a big sort of convention of booksellers in next month, and we're going to be seeing, hundreds of authors and, picking up the arcs of their books and getting excited for the new year.
It's where we all met Tommy Orange last year.
That's right. And Angie Thomas, for that matter.
Well, thank you both so much. Amy Thomas owns Pegasus Books. They've got 3 stores in Berkeley and Oakland. She has been a bookseller since 1980. Amy, thank you for all of your work and all of the everything you bring to the community, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for this show.
Pete Mulville, of course, thank you. Pete Mulvihill is co-owner of Green Apple Books, an independent bookstore selling new and used books for more than 50 years. They have two locations in San Francisco, and such a treasure in San Francisco, Pete. Sorry I couldn't be there in person to see both of you, but thank you so much, Pete, for joining us again.
Always a pleasure, Rose. Thanks.
Great to have both of you. And coming up after a very short break, we will be joined by Ken Rogers, who has been a psychologist with Kaiser for 15 years. He is currently on strike in Roseville, California. We'll be right back. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to talk about why mental health clinicians who work for Kaiser Permanente are currently on a 5-day strike. This strike is affecting more than 100 Kaiser clinics and medical facilities in California. Mental health workers say that they are striking to improve patient care and also for improved working conditions. And now I would like to welcome Ken Rogers. He has been a psychologist with Kaiser for 15 years. He works with adult patients, and he is currently striking in Roseville, California. Hi, Ken. Thank you for taking a break from the strike to join us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Ken. You have been a psychologist for 15 years. You are a shop steward. You're one of the organizers of the strike. So you're really deep into all of this. Why did you all decide to go on a 5-day strike?
We decided to go on a 5-day strike because of, I'm also on the bargaining committee for our contract, which ran out at the end of September. And so we've been negotiating a new contract. And that contract has stalled around issues related to patient care and employee health, you know, in terms of the working conditions in our clinics.
Well, let's first talk about patient health. I was shocked to learn that in some cases, let's say a patient needs therapy for extreme anxiety and depression. I was shocked to learn that in some cases, patients have to wait 2 months for a follow-up appointment?
Yes. Unfortunately, although the organization has contributed resources to building new buildings and hiring new staff, these shortfalls still exist. And the latest report to the DMHC stated as much, that there are still deficits that need to be made up for, and patients have to wait for, you know, they can wait as much as 8 weeks for return visits. And a return visit is psychotherapy. It is the work we do. Work we do is not just the intake visits, but it's also these return visits that are so important to completing a treatment plan.
And this is really important because usually what happens is a patient will see a therapist, let's say every Monday. And if mm-hmm. you come in on a Monday and you're told, sorry, we can't see you until February, I mean, what is the patient supposed to do if they're dealing with extreme anxiety?
You know, a lot of patients will, you know, they go to other sources. They end up in the emergency room because of self-harm. I mean, there's all kinds of tragedies that occur when patients aren't adequately seen. I find it ironic that the organization is making such a big deal about, you know, us planning this action during the holidays, you know, when these sorts of waits go on all year long. All year long, patients are denied care because of their waits. You know, care delayed is care denied, and this is going on all the time.
We emailed Kaiser to ask them to join us, and they didn't get back to us. According to the National Union of Healthcare Workers, this week, Kaiser reported a $2.9 billion profit over the first 9 months of this year, after reporting $3.8 billion in profits for 2017. And tell us, I mean, this is not, this fight didn't happen just this week. I mean, you all have been raising alarms and demanding better patient care for the past many, many years, right? The past 7 years. What has really changed over that time?
In the entire time I've been working for this organization, this problem has existed. In the beginning of my time working for the organization, we did not have the support of the of our union representatives for these sorts of shortfalls. So we decertified that union and went with a new union, and we have been actively fighting these issues with the new union, with the current union, the National Union of Healthcare Workers, NUHW, since 2011. And this resulted in, you know, the fines that they had in 2013 and the attempt to manage the problem, but it still exists.
And for people who are not familiar with how Kaiser works, so 8 million members in California have Kaiser insurance. People are paying up front and they're getting their insurance. Yep. And when they're calling to say, you know, something's happening, I have depression, I have anxiety, I need some kind of help, what happens once they make that initial phone call?
Well, when they make the initial phone call, they are brought into treatment, you know, relatively quickly, because that's what Kaiser was fined over, and that's where their priorities are. Their priorities are looking good to the regulators as much as possible and getting that initial contact. So if you call into Kaiser, you get that first appointment. But like I said earlier in this interview, patient care, psychotherapy is multiple visits. And so you have this kind of big front door, small waiting room atmosphere where you can get right in, no problem, but the care you receive after that drops off significantly. And in terms of mental health parity, we wouldn't do this to people with cancer. We wouldn't do this to people with any other kind of medical condition. You wouldn't come in, the doctor makes a recommendation for the treatment that you need, and then you're told by your HMO, which, by the way, you've already paid into, you know, or your employer's paid into, well, you know, you're going to have to wait a couple months.
And, you know, Ken, we've done a lot of shows about Me Too, about the Kavanaugh hearings, and so many people called in with stories of, you know, sexual assault, rape, and talked about how difficult it is to find a therapist. So, you know, even outside of the world of Kaiser, it's very difficult for a lot of people to get the therapy that they need because insurance often doesn't cover it. And we're definitely going to do a much longer show about access. But can you give us a few personal stories? The NUHW has been posting a lot of patient stories on the website about people who say that, you know, they were referred to third-party contractors who did an intake but never followed up. I mean, people who are already dealing with trauma and stress, just trying to get an appointment and having to jump through hoops is even more stress. What are you hearing from your patients about this?
Well, you know, how it comes to me is that the patients have tried to get into the system, because you're right, there's all this runaround with it. They talk to somebody who says, well, why don't you go through one of our third-party providers? They call the third-party providers. You know, they don't get back to them. Everybody's busy. Nobody wants to deal with it, you know. So they get bounced around there. They don't get care there. After a couple months of that, they come back to Kaiser and say, look, I tried to reach somebody. You know, nobody's getting back to me. Nobody wants to take this case. Then somehow they get into my caseload, which is always, you know, extremely compacted, but somehow they manage to find their way. And then I learn about this. And I'm appalled. I mean, nobody's coming into my... I'm not seeing these people and saying, oh, yeah, okay, well, now's the time where you got to settle for things. I'm trying to help these people. And, you know, this is really... I'm speaking personally, but this is the attitude of all of the providers on the line. Every single one of us cares deeply about patient care. And none of us would be out here doing this kind of thing at any time of year if we thought we had another alternative and we thought we had an employer who was taking us seriously at the bargaining table.
I understand, Ken, that you and other healthcare workers at Kaiser feel like you're just running around like something is on fire every single day. You work through your lunch break. You don't take breaks. You even work and don't get paid. So sometimes, I mean, I understand that you sometimes go in an hour early to see patients because there's just no appointments available for people.
I use literally every part of my schedule for our patient care. Not only direct patient care, but indirect patient care. I mean, the organization is well aware because their management program is based upon the recommendations that I've made for this. So they're well aware of how busy we are and how we utilize all the time we have. And yes, if I've got a patient I'm working with, and they need to be seen next week or they need to be seen at some point, I am going to use time that maybe I necessarily are not getting paid for to see them, if it's urgent enough, if the need is great enough. I would say this is with everybody. I would say this is in all cases. And I do try to balance out care by treatment plan, but it is a very, very aggressive schedule. You talk to somebody in the organization and they'll give you numbers and what this means. But, I mean, one of the things that bothered me immensely is the press release discussed, you know, the industry standard of the level of care that we provide. That's not the industry standard of care. They made that number up in a boardroom. You know, mm-hmm. I was at the meeting when we were bargaining over the number. It's ridiculous. Maybe it becomes an industry standard when one of the largest employers, you know, starts using it, but it's a ridiculous standard, and we're exhausted in our offices. We, you know, if I have three patients drop out, there's always stuff for me to do in the clinic.
And, you know, in our remaining minutes, Ken, there are real-life consequences to all of this. Sonoma County Supervisor Shirley Zane told USA Today that her husband, Peter Kingston, killed himself in 2011 after struggling with anxiety and depression. She said that her husband tried to see a Kaiser therapist in early December 2010, but was sent to an anxiety group instead. He was assigned a therapist later that month and had two appointments, an initial intake and then a follow-up. And on January 15th, she said her husband told her his therapist could not see him until March, and he took his life 3 days later.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Terrible.
We talked with Shirley and just the situation that she went through, and it's these are the kinds of things that should never be occurring. You know, we have a chant on the line. One suicide is too many suicides. You know, it's totally unacceptable.
And Ken, I have to wonder, you know, we're talking about a very wealthy part of the state. Sonoma County has money.
Yeah.
California is the fifth largest economy in the world. I mean, what is it like in poor parts of the country, rural Oklahoma, rural, you know, West Virginia? I mean, what is it like in other parts of the country if this is happening in California?
I think that there's a systemic problem with how we deal with mental health in this country. I think mm-hmm. that it's too expensive. I mean, this is how it all coming from, you know, a psychologist who's quote unquote well paid, but it's too expensive these degrees are too expensive. I mean, you talk about providers who have to be in graduate school for a very long time, incur expenses. And basically, there are no loan repayment programs for what we do. So they get out, and then all of a sudden, they charge these exorbitant rates in private practice, or, you know, they get paid a lot of money, which makes it difficult for an employer like Kaiser to work with that. And to some extent, I'm sympathetic, but, you know, I would say that the cost of training and becoming a mental health specialist in this country creates this sort of cascading effect where it becomes a very expensive proposition down the line.
Mm. Yes, we're going to do a longer show about this. But in our final minute, Ken, you're all on a five-day strike across the state of California. Just quickly, what are you calling for?
Specifically, we're calling for the employer to take our concerns about patient care, about staffing, seriously at the bargaining table. They say they're willing to bargain. We've met in bargaining sessions, but these bargaining sessions are slow walk, kind of let's do, you know, 1% of what we need to do per session. At the rate we're going, we're not going to be done with this contract until 2025. I mean, and they're deliberately slow walking it. Like, just think, could be resolved tomorrow. Could be resolved this afternoon if the parties would meet and say, okay, because they know exactly where we are on these ratios. We know where they are. This could be worked out. And there's really, at the bargaining table, a lack of will to do that.
Well, Ken, thank you for your work. I mean, what you all do is so important. And we would love to have you back to find out how Kaiser responds to this strike. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Ken Rogers has been a psychologist at Kaiser Permanente. He is striking in Roseville. Kaiser mental health workers are on a five-day strike across the state of California. Find out more about why they're striking and their demands, yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar.